From Washington, this is VOA News. I'm Victor Beatty reporting. President Donald Trump says he'll announce Tuesday whether he'll pull the U.S. out of the international nuclear agreement with Iran and reimpose sanctions. The president has repeatedly referred to the 2015 agreement as deeply flawed, involving the scope of inspections, Iran's ballistic missile program, and the so-called sunset provision. British Foreign Secretary Boris Johnson was in Washington Monday, urging U.S. officials to stay in the deal, which Tehran refuses to change.
The core of it, they will want to keep. But what we can do is be tougher on them in other respects and try to address that key question of what happens when the deal expires. And that's where, actually, to be fair, I think the President of the United States has a valid point, and we need to address that with our European friends and with other partners.
Johnson suggested a wider agreement.
A superstructure, if you like, of agreements that try to tackle the bad stuff Iran is doing, tackle the ICBMs, tackle the interference that they're engaging in countries in the region, push back on Iran, and then deal with this fundamental question of what happens in 2025.
That's when a hold on Iran's nuclear weapons program ends. Iran's foreign ministry spokesman, Bahram Ghassemi, warned of a heavy price if the U.S. pulls out. Iranian President Hassan Rouhani Monday indicated Tehran could stay in the agreement with the other signatories. The commander of the Libyan National Army, Khalifa Haftar, announced the start of military operations to capture the eastern city of Derna, now under the control of a coalition of jihadist fighters. The LNA has the city surrounded with ground combat and airstrikes reported. In Nigeria, the military said Monday it rescued hundreds of people held by Boko Haram in four villages in northeast Borno State, most women and children. This is VOA News. Lebanon's Iran-backed Hezbollah and its allies claimed victory Monday after Sunday's parliamentary election, capturing over half the 128 seats. The Sunni Prime Minister Saad Hariri's party lost seats, although he's expected to call for a new coalition government. University of New South Wales senior lecturer Anthony Billingsley does not necessarily see this as a victory for Iran.
I think the most significant thing is nothing to do with Iran, but it reflects domestic politics in Lebanon. So now we've got a situation where Shia are clearly the dominant force in Lebanese politics.
Hezbollah was formed in the 1980s to confront Israel and currently fights alongside Syrian President Assad's forces. It's listed as a terrorist organization by the U.S. In Syria, hundreds of rebels left the last major besieged opposition enclave in parts of central Hama and Homs provinces. A convoy of buses left under the supervision of Russian military police. Before leaving, they surrendered heavy weapons to rebel-held areas of northern Syria. An American Protestant minister accused of being linked to terrorists remains in a Turkish prison after his second court appearance Monday in a case causing strains in U.S.-Turkish ties. Andrew Brunson, who has pastored a Turkish Christian church for decades, is also accused of espionage and faces up to 35 years in prison. He's denied all the charges. C.C. Heil is executive senior counsel of the group American Center for Law and Justice defending Brunson.
Day two of his trial, it was two secret witnesses. Their faces are blurred, their voices are distorted. And then there were five open witnesses, but none of them had direct knowledge of Pastor Brunson doing anything wrong.
Heil said Brunson is a pawn in Turkey's quest to have U.S.-based exiled Muslim cleric Fethullah Gulen extradited to face charges of orchestrating a failed coup 2 years ago. A U.N. report Monday accused the Afghan Air Force of killing and wounding more than 100 men and boys attending a religious ceremony in the northern city Kunduz last month. The government said the April 2nd attack targeted Taliban fighters. The U.S. has announced new sanctions on Venezuela, while Vice President Mike Pence urged the Organization of American States to suspend the government of President Nicolas Maduro.
The time has come, first and foremost, to cut off Venezuela's corrupt leaders from laundering money through your financial systems. Secondly, the time has come to enact visa restrictions that prevent Venezuela's leaders from entering your nations. And finally, we call on all freedom-loving nations across our hemisphere to hold Maduro accountable for destroying Venezuela's democracy.
Pence also called for a suspension of the May 20th Venezuelan election. UN Secretary General Guterres Monday called on the government of Democratic Republic of Congo to lift a ban on demonstrations to ensure a level playing field ahead of December's election. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bhatti in Washington. Today is Tuesday, May 8th. And here are some of the stories we are covering. South Sudan President Salva Kiir said his former first vice president Riek Machar is welcome back to Juba.
The president said Riek Machar can come to Juba and start to release and be guaranteed the security, but not as a political leader.
Ateng Wakateng is the spokesman for South Sudan President Salva Kiir. DRC's main opposition UPDS has launched a reconciliation campaign to unify the party ahead of the December election. Zimbabwe opposition leader Nelson Chamisa has been touring the United Kingdom. And Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari leaves today to the United Kingdom for medical checkup.
Section 145 of the 1999 Constitution has amended. The demand of the president that whenever he's been on a medical vacation, he must transmit a letter to the parliament informing them of his desire to go on medical vacation.
Kola Olubundinya is the National Publicity Secretary of the opposition PDP. A petition is being delivered today to the Liberian legislature calling for the establishment of a war and economic crimes commission. And Uganda's largest university responds to sexual harassment charges. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. It appears South Sudan President Salva Kiir has had a change of mind concerning his former first vice president Riek Machar. Now, Mr. Kiir says Machar is welcome to come back to Juba and will be given full protection. Mr. Machar went to South Africa in 2016 for medical checkup, but his supporters have accused the South African government of holding him under house arrest at the urging of the Juba government. The South Sudan government has denied the charges, but has described Mr. Machar as a warmonger. Speaking over the weekend, President Kiir said Machar is a South Sudanese and should be relocated to Juba, not to any other country. Ateng Wekateng, spokesman for President Kiir, says Mr. Machar can come back to Juba, but not as a political leader.
Which is true, the president during the address to the SPLM National Liberation Session that was held at Freedom Hall 2 days ago, said Riek Machar can come to Juba. South Sudanese and did not revoke citizenship, and therefore he can come and would be guaranteed the security, but not as a political leader.
Okay, let's take it from there first. What happened throughout these years since the fighting began, 2013? Your government has maintained that Riek Machar is a warmonger. What changed your president's mind?
Well, there must be a political solution to a fighting that is taking place. And enough is enough. South Sudanese wanted to have peace. And since Riek Machar has realized himself that we cannot make war, we cannot continue to fight, we cannot capture the presidency by force, is an indication that, you know, there has to be some sort of coming together. The SPLM, during the Arusha agreement that purported to reunify the three factions of the SPLM, namely the SPLM-IG, the SPLM-IO, with the two parts, the one for Dr. Riek Machar, with the main outside the country, and the other one for the current first vice president, General Saddam Bengai, who has by virtue of the agreement or resolution of conflict in the Republic of South. The SPLM-FDs, that is the political detainees. These three factions have to come. SPLM-IO, Saddam Bengai, has already now unified with the SPLM. And therefore, Riek Machar should come back now to the country as a normal citizen. So it is the report the president was trying to reiterate.
Now, this announcement by your president is coming on the heels of the upcoming consultations and the next round of peace talks coming up soon with IGA. Was the president pushed by IGA to make way for Riek Machar's return?
No, the president has a moral obligation as a leader of the country and as a leader of the SPLA. It is so necessary that, you know, all the political leaders coming together, and particularly the SPLM, in an attempt to reunify the SPLM, the president found himself on a moral obligation to do this. So if Riek Machar comes to the country and he stays peacefully until the election time, we can run for any position we want within the SPLM party and within the country.
The announcement is also coming at a time that we have heard that your vice president, Taban Dengang, has dissolved his political party. Is this to make way for Riek Machar to take up the vice presidency?
No, they are not connected. Taban Dengang, the first vice president, dissolved his wing of the SPLM, which is the SPLM IO, in an attempt to implement the Arusha Agreement, which calls for the unification of the three factions of the SPLM. So it has nothing to do with giving Riek Machar any leeway. So Riek Machar is not relevant here.
Ateng Wek Ateng is the spokesman for South Sudan President Salva Kiir. He was speaking with me from the capital, Juba. The main opposition in the Democratic Republic of Congo has launched a reconciliation campaign to unify the party ahead of the December general election. Ibrahim Luakabuanga is the national secretary in charge of communication for the Union for Democracy and Social Progress, UDPS, and spokesman for party leader Felix Tshisekedi. He says the reconciliation campaign is part of the effort to bring back senior party officials, including parliamentarians, who left due to disagreement with the party's leadership. It also came after Felix Tshisekedi reconfirmed Jean-Marc Kaboun as the secretary general of the party. UDPS spokesman Luakabuanga tells viewers Peter Clotty that the party's focus now is to win the upcoming December elections.
Yes, this plan is part of the main topic points President Tshisekedi put as his plan during his presidency. You know, we've been through a lot of issues where some leaders have left the parties. Those others, just for other reasons, did also the same. So it's really important for us to get united in order to go in as one team to go to the election. So a commission has been put in place, and definitely they already at work.
Is the reconfirmation of the party's secretary general by Felix Tshisekedi part of this reconciliation effort?
I think Mr. Jean-Marc Kaboun has done a good job. You know, it was not easy for him as general secretary to secure the party. He has received a lot of pressure from the government side, from people from Kabila trying to get him, you know, into their side, but he remained firm, he resisted that. And also his better knowledge of the party, I think those are the reason why he was reconducted as general secretary by President Felix Tshisekedi. It was not the time for us right now to get another person who will, you know, request few months or weeks, you know, in order to know exactly how things work. Since this is an electoral year, it was important to research stability, and Mr. Kaboun is offering this stability. I think we can move on to the three objectives that we do have, which is restructuring the party, getting unity of the party, and also winning the election.
Well, I understand your party is also planning to launch a series of demonstrations across the country to put pressure on the Electoral Commission and President Kabila's government to ensure elections take place. Supporters of the president are saying these plans are misplaced because elections will take place this December. What do you say to that?
Remember, at the beginning of the year, we had every Sunday protests and march every Sunday. So they call out Congolese people to get back on the street because it looks like actually President Kabila doesn't want an election this year. And we have, you know, to let him know that we as the Congolese people, we won't, you know, let him, you know, trying to steal, I miss another mandate. Remember also that UDPS was part of those protests, you know, during the first three months of this year. So we're going to also, you know, be alongside with all the forces and those who want to see Mr. Kabila out of the power for a transition without him.
Ibrahim Luakabuanga is the spokesman for DRC opposition leader Felix Tshisekedi. He spoke with viewers Peter Clotty from the capital, Kinshasa. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, May 8th. Please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is now 15 minutes past the hour. Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari leaves today, Tuesday, to the United Kingdom for medical checkup. A statement issued last night by Garba Shehu, Senior Special Assistant on Media and Publicity, said President Buhari will undertake a four-day trip to the United Kingdom. The president, who is 75 years old, spent much of 2017 in London receiving treatment for an undisclosed ailment. Kola Olagbongdiyan is the National Publicity Secretary of the Opposition People's Democratic Party, the PDP of Nigeria. He said the president is under a constitutional mandate to inform Parliament before making any medical trip abroad.
Section 145 of the 1999 Constitution as amended demands of the president that whenever he's been on a medical vacation, he must transmit a letter to the Senate and the House of Representatives in a parliament informing them of his desire to go on medical vacation. This will enable the vice president to act in a capacity while he's away. The PDP is not aware at this moment if these conditions have been met by the president.
Well, the president said he's going there at the request of his doctor and he will be away for 4 days. Does he still have to inform the parliament?
He has to inform the parliament. He must transmit a letter that he's going on a medical vacation. It's a constitutional requirement.
But you don't have a problem with the president going for a medical checkup?
During the election in 2015, that he will have a business in the shores of Nigeria to go and seek medical. But the unfortunate thing is that he has not been able to keep to that funding. And even at some point, the first lady, Hadia Aisha, he said that even the medical facility within the presidential villa has no ordinary anesthetic. And that is the situation in most of the clinics and most of the hospitals across the nation.
Let me talk about the killings in Kaduna State. 45 people killed. What does the PDP know about what happened?
The president has never made a disclosure of his health situation to Nigerians. It's part of the fact that the taxpayers are responsible for his medical bills, not only in Nigeria. I will full disclosure of the president's image or what he's seen in doctors there. Nobody in Nigeria is aware. There's no full disclosure. And the opposition party has made demand repeatedly when it's a president to make a full disclosure. But that has not come up.
I wanted to ask you about the killings that took place in Kaduna State in the Burning Gwari local government area. We hear about 45 people that were killed in what was said to be retaliatory attacks by bandits. Does the PDP know about that, and what's your reaction?
The People's Democratic Party has demanded that the president should live up to its basic responsibility of protection of life and the territorial integrity of our country.
The president, the State House, has sent out a press release saying that President Buhari has approved the establishment of a new battalion of the Nigerian Army, as well as a new police area command, as a reaction to what took place there. Is this satisfactory to you?
That's a panicking measure. It's possible and established a police station in a situation of asymmetry war.
Kola Olugbondeya is the National Publicity Secretary of the Opposition People's Democratic Party of Nigeria. He was speaking with me from the capital, Abuja. A petition is being presented today to the Liberian legislature to demand the establishment of a war and economic crimes commission. The petitioners will also ask for the implementation of the country's Truth and Reconciliation Commission's recommendations to bring to justice those who allegedly committed war crimes during Liberia's civil war. Fubi Harris is our head of the Citizens Action for the Establishment of an Economic and War Crimes Court in Liberia. He says his group is optimistic.
We're optimistic this time. Article 34E of our constitution gave the legislature the power to establish subordinate courts beneath the Supreme Court of Liberia. So this is within their purview. So we're just using our constitutional right as per Article 17. which gives us the right to peacefully assemble and instruct our representatives once it is for the common good of the Liberian people. We are not saying anyone is guilty, but let them establish the court and let these guys go and have their day in court.
The legislature is controlled by which party? The CDC? And what are the chances? Because President George Weah has not said directly whether he would like for the establishment of this war crimes court.
And the legislature is mixed with both CDC lawmakers, independent candidates, and also other political parties. So the CDC does not actually control the House in terms of numerical strength, but though they are the ruling party and also produce the Speaker of the House from the CDC. But in numbers, they have mixed of other parties and independent candidates that are in there. We also counting on President Weah's 2004 statement where he called for the establishment of the war crimes court as a means of punishing those who put guns into the hands of kids. So we think 14 years after, he's now the commander-in-chief, and I think it's the right person to make sure that this happens.
Is there a political will in Liberia at the moment for the establishment of this war crimes court? Because there are some people who would say, please, the war is over and let Liberians move ahead.
We've been doing series of survey on the streets. We've been also having a series of local radio communications and interviews. And from the participation of the callers that have been calling in, it shows that 97% are in favor. We also did online sampling of views for Liberians. We also see 97% in favor. We also done street interviews, and we also see 97% in favor. So the trend from the Liberian people tells us clearly that this is something that they want.
Besides this call for the establishment of a war crimes court, your group is also not in favor of what President Weah had suggested earlier this year, that is the amending of the Constitution to make non-Negro citizens of Liberia.
Yes, yeah, certainly, because we're saying it's untimely. First and foremost, Liberians are spectators in their own country, and the president made a statement during his inauguration that he will see to it that Liberians are no longer spectators in their own country. And after 1 week coming out to propose the citizenship for non-Negroes and land ownership to non-Liberians, we see that as a contradiction to the original plan at the inaugural ceremony. Looking at this, we see certain group of people that are going to be pushing for it, mostly the Lebanese and the Indians. And their allies in Liberia have not shown worthy of them being good citizens if we allow them to be citizens in our country.
Fubi Henrich is head of the Citizens Action for the Establishment of an Economic and War Crimes Court in Liberia. He was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. In Zimbabwe, the Movement for Democratic Change Formation of Nelson Chamisa says it is ready to conduct the party's primary elections ahead of the forthcoming general elections later this year. In a statement, the party said it now has a comprehensive panel of approved parliamentary and local government candidates ready to represent the party. Meanwhile, party leader Nelson Chamisa is currently in the United Kingdom, where he has been speaking to Zimbabweans. Lance Guma is a London-based Zimbabwe journalist.
There was quite a large crowd that gathered to hear Nelson Chamisa speak, and I think it was a refreshing address because, you know, for the past 38 years, Zimbabweans are used to hearing politicians preaching hate language, saying down with this one is a sellout, this one is being sponsored by the West. So it's really toxic language that we've been used to for the past 38 years. So it was a bit refreshing to hear a leader spell out his vision for the country. You know, he spelled out his vision for health, education, building infrastructure in rural areas, how his vision of stamping down on corruption. He actually warned that his government would save out life sentences for people who steal money from government coffers. So I think it was refreshing.
So Zimbabwe has an election coming up. What does he think are his chances?
He's quite confident that in a free and fair election, he's going to win. In fact, he actually stated that in a free and fair election, if Mnangagwa, the incumbent president, was to get as much as 5%, he would offer his sister to him for free. Well, he was just trying to emphasize how confident he was of winning in a free and fair election. But in that address, he highlighted what he feels is the biggest threat to the freeness and fairness of this election. And he's saying they have evidence of ballot tampering. So I think they are going to be launching, from what he was saying, court applications because they are not happy with the awarding of tenders for the company that is going to be printing the ballot paper. So he's saying the security of the ballot papers in terms of where they are going to be printed, all the parties should be happy with where the ballot papers are printed.
Lance Kuma is a London-based Zimbabwe journalist. He was speaking with me from London. Me Too movement coming to Uganda's largest university? The school recently suspended a staff member accused of demanding sexual favors from a female student. Meanwhile, trial preparations are underway for a landmark civil suit filed by a former student who said the university failed to protect her from sexual harassment and violated her rights. Halima Atumani reports from the university in Kampala.
Makerere University counts 40,000 students and is considered one of the top schools in East Africa. Yet, Makerere is now under fire, accused of not doing enough to stop the alleged sexual harassment of female students. Chisule Rehma said she never reported her experience. She went to a professor to dispute a grade.
Then the lecturer made a statement like, have you had sex before? So I was wondering, how is this coming up? Like, I'm asking for marks and you're asking me whether... So when I gave him a very weird face, I'm like, what are you talking about? He tried to like, no, that's not the thing. So if you've had sex before, you're supposed to... The marks... Like, it wasn't making sense. I had to just, like... From that day, I don't even go to his office.
The issue has long been whispered about at Makerere, but two cases have gone public this year.
It's someone with authority who abuses it and, seeks for sexual favors from vulnerable students in return to, you know, some missing marks, some academic-related favor.
Law professor Sylvia Tamale leads a committee set up in 2017 to handle cases of sexual harassment. More than a decade ago, administrators rolled out a short-lived and much criticized dress code for female students.
I was challenging that proposal. I told him, supposing I find your lips extremely sexy and, you know, kissable, are you going to cover them? In other words, sexualizing women's bodies is not a women's problem. Blaming the victim is extremely wrong. It is missing the point.
Lawyer Isaac Semakade is representing a female student who sued the university this February. She was dismissed in 2013 after she reported sexual harassment. The court proceedings remain under seal.
The impact of the global Me Too movement cannot be understated here.
There are signs of change. The university's sexual harassment policy dates back to 2006, but the school is now creating mandatory online training to raise awareness. Meanwhile, administrators quickly suspended a registrar official in April after a student posted a photo on Facebook of his alleged inappropriate behavior. That investigation is ongoing. Halima Athmani for VOA News, Kampala.
Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari leaves today, Tuesday, to the United Kingdom for medical checkup. A statement issued last night by Garba Shehu, Senior Special Assistant on Media and Publicity, said President Buhari will undertake a four-day trip to London. That's it for this Tuesday, May 8th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team producer, Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, I'm James Butt in Washington wishing you a good day.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.